Education choice advances in South Carolina while the Federal Department of Education experiences the strong arm of DOGE, and the life debate continues on in South Carolina. Where do we stand? How's the ship sailing? We'll talk about it today on the Palmetto Family Matters Show. Welcome into the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state of South Carolina. It's the Palmetto Family Matters Show, where faith meets influence, connecting South Carolina's leaders with biblical truth, shaping policy through prayer, advocacy, and action. Justin Hall, Randy Page, Steve Pettit here with you on a Wednesday morning. It is Wednesday, March 12th in the year of our Lord, 2025, as we sit here with you to talk about the goings-on underneath the Copper Dome and beyond. And let's start, Steve, with this. It's been a busy couple of weeks inside the State House. There's a lot going on and still a lot coming down the pike.
Yeah, you know, the year started out where everybody was saying how slow it was. Well, something happened in the last couple of weeks, especially last week. When we look at the fact that last week we faced the human life protection issue, the educational choice issue, and even on Thursday, an issue of trying to build a casino in the state of South Carolina. Mm. All of that in 1 week. So yeah. It's very interesting.
Yeah, we like to pile the plate full. It's like a barbecue buffet. We like to go, as we go through the line, just pile the plate, and that paper plate just continues to sag down. There's a lot going on. Let's start with education. And education inside the South Carolina House of Representatives. And Randy, the Senate moved very quickly on this bill, S-62. We've talked about it at length over the last couple of weeks. The House began to debate it last Wednesday, and then they passed it last Wednesday. I didn't anticipate that quick of a debate. Of course, I'm used to more of the pro-life abortion debates and the help not harm debates. But the bill passed 79-38. Now, it is not the same as S-62 was when it entered the House. The House Education Committee took liberties and made some changes. Chairwoman Erickson has her own vision for how she wants this to play out. But your take on how education fared inside the South Carolina House of Representatives last week?
Well, I was really pleased, you know, frankly, to be able to watch the debate and take place both in committee and on the House floor on the school choice provision. Obviously, having worked school choice for a number of years, albeit decades here in South Carolina. And so, you know, there were some unique differences between the two pieces of legislation. Well, it's the same piece of legislation, but between the bill and then the amendment, you know, looking at funding, where the funding's coming from, looking at eligibility as far as how many students, you know, looking at the scope as well as, how many students, and then looking at the federal poverty level there on the House side. And so, you know, I'm hopeful that, as the bill goes back to the Senate for concurrence, that, you know, it would be wonderful if the Senate would concur, because I think the House did a fantastic job. But if not, it would then go to a conference committee where you would have three members of the House and three members of the Senate who would get together to iron out differences, and then back to both houses for an up or down vote.
Right.
And then to Governor McMaster. So,
And the concurrence, the concurrence and the conference committees, just want to work through this really quickly. When you're talking about a bill that sees significant change, very rarely do we see a bill cross from the Senate to the House or the House to the Senate, and it remains the same, and everyone's happy, and everyone holds hands and sings kumbaya. I think has that ever happened? I don't know.
Probably not.
Once it crosses over and it gets those changes, whichever body it goes back to has to concur, or for lack of a better term, agree with the changes. And that is a straight up or down vote. Correct. Very easy, very simple, no filibustering, none of that, no cloture needed in the Senate. It just is an up or down majority vote. Typically, you won't even get those either way. Now, if it's agreed upon, as Randy, you mentioned, it goes to the governor's desk. He either signs it or he vetoes it, and you move on. In the case of a non-concurrence, it will then be incumbent upon the Senate president and the Speaker of the House to appoint members to what we call a conference committee. And that conference committee will consist of six people, three from each chamber, and within those six and within those individual three in both chambers, you will see two members of the majority party and one member of the minority party. Typically, what we would see here in this case in education, if we can kind of forecast it here, should we get to a conference committee, I can go ahead and tell you that probably two of the people who will be on the conference committee will be Senator Greg Hembree and Representative Shannon Erickson, the chair people of both education committees in each chamber. That will probably be the case. The second person on each one will probably be someone with a vested interest in education. And then the third one will be one of the minority members who also has a vested interest. If I could forecast it out, and this is just me talking, I have no insider information, I would imagine on the House side, you could see someone like a Jerry Govan or a Gilda Cobb Hunter. On the Senate side, on the minority side, you're probably going to be somebody like a Tamika Devine or a Russell Ott. It'd be something like that. The Senate has a lot less to choose from because there's only 13 of them than the House, which has 36. All that to say, we will get some sort of compromise on this legislation here soon, whether it is a concurrence vote in the Senate or whether it's a conference committee where they will iron out some other issues. Speaking of education, though, if you remember, Jimmy Carter established the Federal Department of Education in his term, what many consider to be the most forgettable presidency in American history, maybe until recently. He established the Federal Department of Education. Since then, the rankings of the United States of America in terms of education have not been great. And I believe, and I might need to be corrected here, but Ronald Reagan made a promise to abolish the Department of Education.
He did, yes.
And subsequently, most Republican candidates for president and Ross Perot all did the same thing.
As well as the party platforms throughout, yes.
Right, and the party platform states it. Now, we have this new invention, and it's not new. It's actually, I do want to make this point because we haven't made this point on the show recently. DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency, is not new in its idea. In fact, Woodrow Wilson established his own version of a governmental efficiency program. Now, his worked a little bit differently in that it was to see how efficient we could make the government as we swell it to its biggest size ever. Franklin Delano Roosevelt also established a Department of Government Efficiency. I believe Harry Truman established one as well. I'm sensing a pattern here. William Jefferson Clinton, I believe, had some version of it. Al Gore wanted one. You see the pattern. So there is this thing called DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency. Elon Musk is the one running it. He is not a government employee. He's doing this out of apparently the kindness of his own heart. To that point, the Department of Education has now felt a bit of the constriction from DOGE. It was announced yesterday morning that at 6 p.m., employees and staff of the Federal Department of Education must vacate their offices. Now, if I were told by either of the men across the table for me to vacate my office, I would know that doesn't mean you leave for the day and you come back tomorrow with a fresh cup of coffee and we start again. Vacating means you're gone.
The party's over.
The party's over. Turn out the lights. The party's over. It's done. We move on. The Federal Department of Education on Tuesday is working now with 1,300 less workers than it did going into the day. They started the year with 4,133 employees, and their workforce will now be about half that size, according to an article from the New York Times. The cuts could portend an additional move by President Trump to essentially dismantle the department, as he says he wants to do. But remember, even though it is a branch, it is an extension of the executive branch within the administration, Congress has to abolish it. It can't be the president by executive fiat. It has to be the Congress. Right. The big thing about this is it's not about DOGE. The big thing here, tying this in what we see in our state house over the last couple of weeks and what we're seeing nationwide, is a fundamental shift in education or in the thinking behind educating our young people. It's not just about what the federal government wants. We've always said here that the government closest to you affects you the most. It would seem to me that the best way to educate would be that the state meets the needs of its students. Particularly, let's take South Carolina, for example. You guys are in Greenville. Kids in Greenville don't face the same situations that kids in Charleston do, or Monk's Corner, or Hartsville, right? Kellytown. They don't face the same issues. Pacolet, Pumpkin Town. All these places are real things. When you have differentiations like that, how hard is it for the federal government to meet the needs of those kids, when even it's difficult, truthfully, for the state to meet those needs? So as we're moving forward here, we're seeing cuts at the Department of Education federally. Our state education system is about to change greatly. Yes. I would like to see it change even more, but it's changing greatly. What do we attribute this to? We can start with Randy and then move to Steve. What do we attribute this to? This can't just be because one man was elected in 2024. How have we seen this snowball go, and what's causing all this?
I mean, I think we can look back to almost 5 years ago today when we had the shutdown over COVID. Mm-hmm. And I think so many parents actually got to see what was going on in their children's public school. And then you had, the attempt at doing things online. Some of it was very clumsy at first. And I think most anyone would say that education really was set back, that children who were not in school really suffered. And that's a long-term process there. And so I think it really caused people to see, should I put them in an independent school? Should I homeschool them? So you saw just that explosion of that. And then you look at what's been going on as, whether you look at NAEP scores, whether you look at, any of the standards that you gauge education by, for the United States versus the world. And honestly, the Department of Education has had an ill effect. It has not really helped on that K-12 side. And I think just, innately we know that the government closest to the people does a better job, that a local school board should be more in tune with what's going on. A state Department of Education should be more in tune with what's going on. And then you just saw this huge bloat of a bureaucracy mm-hmm. at the federal Department of Education. And, Republicans and, President Trump are like, in a lot of ways, I think, let's just give the money to the states and let them do what they want to with it. So I think that's really kind of been the snowball there. Mm-hmm. And then, if the money does come down in block grants to the states, it will be interesting to see how the state of South Carolina uses it to perhaps even turbocharge whatever school choice program is already in place for the state. So I'm really excited to see what's going to happen with that.
And Steve, when it comes to Palmetto Family, when it comes to our vision of a biblical worldview when it comes to education, a lot of people will say, oh, well, that's a theocratic view. Some people would say that's a violation of the First Amendment, which they probably should read the Constitution. However, when it comes to a biblical worldview of education, when you're looking at education choice here in South Carolina, you're looking at possible cuts at the Department of Education, where does that all fit in when it comes to a biblical worldview, understanding what parents' roles are when it comes to education?
Well, I think that's actually the heart and core of really where we are. I think Randy said it very clearly. I think COVID was a catalyst. It was an event of, it was a black swan. It was, nobody expected
that's a good word. Yep.
That it would come in and it would be completely different. And so I think COVID was the catalyst that lit the fuse for something that was already there. And I think the something that was already there was the differentiation of worldviews within American culture, which is essentially a biblical worldview in contrast to the growing secular worldview, materialistic worldview, atheistic worldview, critical social theory worldview that is so in conflict and so contradicts a biblical worldview that this has been building and growing for many, many years. And of course, for a parent, and whether they are a Christian or they hold to traditional values, or as the language is today, common sense values, mm-hmm. what's happening is it's coming down to the reality that parents understand, recognize, and embrace the responsibility of educating their children. It is not the responsibility of the government mm-hmm. to educate children. It doesn't mean the government's not a part of that. It doesn't mean that they have nothing to do with it. But that's what's been growing over a long period of
sure.
time. So that the catalyst of that was essentially two things. It was COVID, a pandemic, a plague, and it was really the last president
mm-hmm.
and the political situation that came out of the Biden administration. And so, therefore, I think that's where we are today. A biblical worldview that we hold here, one of our values at Palmetto Family, is educational freedom. The first parents had two sons, Cain and Abel, and when we read the scripture, they were both apparently educated because they had their own jobs. One was a farmer, one was a shepherd. They were adults, they were responsible, they were taking care of themselves, which is a part of education. So we have always viewed education as the primary responsibility of the parents. I think the future, the present and the future of people that hold to conservative and traditional values are also going to hold to some form of a school choice position,
right?
Whether it's homeschool, public school, Christian school, private school, religious schools, because again, it comes back to who's responsible, and it is the parents.
Agreed. And for this ending of this segment, I just want to say thank you to those of you who reached out to your elected officials, either your senator or your representative or both, as many times as you wanted to. I will just let you know that because you went to palmettoalliance.org and clicked Take Action, and then you clicked on Educational Freedom or Educational Choice, specifically talking about S62, that there were well over 500 messages sent to senators and representatives in this state over the course of about 3 weeks. And what you saw is the effect that your voice has on the issue. They realized that it was important to you. And if it's important to you, it's probably important to more of their constituents who have the power to vote them in or out of office come around the next election. And I know we're just fresh off of one, but and especially on the House side, campaigning will start this summer. So you have to be always looking at ways to connect with your legislator, and we have a ways for you to do that. PalmettoAlliance.org, click on Take Action. We'll talk to you a little bit more about that in just a second. One other issue that took center stage last week is the issue of life. The Human Life Protection Act received a subcommittee hearing in a judiciary subcommittee last week. Now, I've seen my fair share of these hearings. I've seen my fair share of these topics. I've seen my fair share of the protests outside of them. So nothing caught me by surprise other than the sheer number of people that were waiting to get in that building. I did not expect that, knowing that it's early in the session, there hasn't been a lot of buildup. It really wasn't talked about before the agenda was released. I was sort of stunned by it. Now, I do want to set the table here a little bit because it's going to go into what we talk about. The heartbeat bill is the law of the land in South Carolina. It is currently being heard, a challenge to it is currently being heard in the state Supreme Court just to my right. And that way. You can't see that, but that way. That challenge is not challenging the constitutionality of the bill. That's already been done. They challenged that. The law has been upheld as constitutional. That's happening on one side. On the other side, you have a large faction of leaders. And when I say leaders, I mean representatives and senators, who believe that the heartbeat bill does not go far enough and we need to go further in protecting life. And to them, I say I am wholeheartedly with you. It's good. It can be better. Now, The Human Life Protection Act gets a hearing. This from the South Carolina Daily Gazette. Skylar Laird writing this piece. The PACT hearing came in a very interesting state, as Skylar puts it here. The state's 2023 heartbeat law outlaws abortions at 6, possibly 9 weeks of pregnancy, depending on how the state Supreme Court adjudicates. But the hearing went for 3 hours, and of the, let's just use a round number, of the 100 people that testified, 90 of them were against the bill. I'm just using rough numbers. That's not uncommon. It's actually very common. We submitted our testimony, and you can see that on social media. It is there. We have the letter. If you would like a copy of the letter, you can email me, justin@palmettofamily.org. Be happy to send it to you and let you know where we stand. In the midst of the hearing, a letter appeared, Randy, from House Majority Leader Davey Hyatt of Pickens, South Carolina. And it was an interesting letter, and here's a quote pulled in this piece. Quote, this is, I'm quoting, "While my steadfast pro-life view is unwavering, and while the vast majority of members of our Republican caucus share this same commitment, comma, I believe we should consider the importance of waiting for guidance that may be forthcoming from the Supreme Court." Help me on that.
Well, I was going to ask you the same question. Help me on that.
I
don't understand, you know, from a political perspective, from a judicial perspective, what difference it makes on the Human Life Protection
Act. It doesn't.
What the state Supreme Court says.
It. I don't think it does. Mainly because that would just determine 6 or 9 weeks when is a heartbeat. Correct. A heartbeat. Cardiac activity versus right. A heartbeat. But the Human Life Protection Act establishes that life begins at conception, therefore returning null and void whatever the heartbeat bill establishes.
That's correct.
So I'm not sure what exactly this
is. From just a person who's sitting here and they're scratching mm-hmm. their head mm-hmm. that the representative said that they should wait.
Sure.
And what's the wisdom or the logic behind that?
I think, and I'm reading in between the lines, and I'm reading in between the spaces and the letters of the lines, that the House has moved first on this issue every time?
Yes, I believe so.
Even when they did the Human Life Protection Act debate in 2022 or 2023, I get my years muddy, they all run together. When that happened, the Senate at the same time did debate heartbeat. So I'll give the Senate that. I respect my House of Lords,
sure.
the high and esteemable Senate. So they were doing that. The wisdom in this is it's almost a view of the House has done enough leading on this, and I don't think the majority leader is abdicating leadership here. I'm not accusing him of that at all. What I will say is I think he's saying it's time for the Senate to move first on this issue this time. Now, he then later on in his letter, in his statement, says we should wait on the Senate and see what the Senate's going to do. I'll just say this around our table. In 2024, three Republican senators were voted out of office, some of them by the scantest of margins. I'm looking at you, former Senator Sandy Sinn, who lost her seat by 31 votes, something like that, to Senator Matt Lieber in a primary. Sorry, that was in June. And Senator Katrina Sheely lost hers in a primary to Carlisle Kennedy. Yes, to Carlisle Kennedy. And then Penry Gustafson lost hers. Former Senator Penry Gustafson lost hers to Alan Blackman. All three of those gentlemen now are senators. There was a groundswell of voters in South Carolina that said, we are voting you out because of your vote on life, period.
Correct.
Period. Correct. It had nothing to do with their vote on the budget. Right. And it had nothing to do with some of their votes on family issues, because Senator Katrina Sheely was a stalwart champion for children, for foster care, adoption, adults with illnesses such as Alzheimer's and dementia, like, champion. It was this issue. Right or wrong, agree, disagree, it was this one. Yes. South Carolina's General Assembly has a mandate right now to move on this issue. And as a voter in South Carolina and as someone who frequents that building, I don't care who starts it. Just do it.
Yes.
And don't waste, and this is speaking from a purely political perspective here because I'm a wonk. Don't waste the momentum. There's a lot of change in the South Carolina Senate that we don't even have to get into today. Right. But I can tell you, from a brass tacks perspective, if everyone votes the way they are supposed to vote, or I think they will, it would fly in both chambers.
Yes.
You have 50 days. Do something.
Yes.
I don't care who starts it. I really, truly don't. And so there's some confusion over Majority Leader Hyatt's letter. I'll agree. I think it has a lot of ambiguity. But it is clear, and that it appears to be there's a desire for the Senate to move. And if there's a desire for the Senate to move, then, well, call your senator.
Well, I'm in like total agreement, especially in two ways. Number one, we, just like our current president, is acting on the reality that he had a mandate in his vote to do the very things that he's doing, and he is taking leadership responsibility. In this vote in South Carolina regarding life, the mandate was given by the vote.
100%.
And it is a responsibility of our General Assembly leadership to take leadership and to vote in what they say that they believe. But let me take it a step further. We also have a mandate that has come down from the from the U.S. Supreme Court in the overturning of Roe v. Wade that now the position on abortion is not a federal position. It is a state position.
Yep.
And what we were in the past on a federal, in other words, South Carolina had to follow federal law, that has now changed. And now we, South Carolina, are establishing our laws here. And that heartbeat bill, which we're glad that there was a move towards that, is really not where our people are, and that there needs to come, we need to take the responsibility that has been given to us by the federal government to decide for South Carolina where we stand. There are already 12 states that have a human life protection position.
Mm-hmm.
South Carolina does not.
Right.
And so that we need to urge our legislators to take leadership in this session and the mandate that was given and to vote in human life protection.
If you followed this program for any length of time, you know we went in depth on these debates in 2022 and 2023, and some of those had me draw some ire from elected officials. I will note in this Daily Gazette piece, it's actually a very good piece. The Senate has 13 new members, fresh faces, highest number of freshmen in decades, by the way. It's a GOP supermajority for the first time since Reconstruction. That's a length of time. But Senator Tom Davis of Buford has already said he'll filibuster whatever this bill is if it comes to the Senate, which isn't a shock. He did it once. He'll do it again. Again, Steve, as you mentioned, there's a mandate. I mean, when we talk about what is a mandate, right? Everyone says, well, Donald Trump only won the presidency by about 1.5% of the vote. Let me take a little bit of umbrage with that, because 89% of counties across this country moved to the right. He won every single swing state. He won the popular vote. The first time a Republican has won the popular vote since 2004. I was 10. So that's a mandate, and he's taken it. And whether you agree with executive actions or not, he's done them. It's the power of the pen given to him since Abraham Lincoln, really. And he's used it. Great. It's now the Congress's job to codify some things. In the same way, there's a mandate here. And your senator might not have voted the same way as the other ones did. But there's a mandate across both chambers to do their job. And again, if you want me to be frank with you, we weren't that far off from getting this bill passed two different times already. Two. And let me just, it's passed the House every time. Every time. And it is, I want to combat some things. It is not a total abortion ban. The Human Life Protection Act, whatever number it is now,
3457,
is not a total ban. It is not a total ban. It has exceptions for life of the mother or other medical issues that arise during pregnancy that can cause complications. It is not a total ban. Now, you might say, well, it should be. We can have that conversation. I'm willing to have that conversation. The conversation we're having today is it has been returned to the states, not totally, not solely. I think if you read Justice Alito's opinion in Dobbs, you will see that there is a mechanism and there is an avenue for Congress to make law on this issue. I will just tell you that we are so evenly split in Congress right now, you will not see a piece of pro-life legislation pass and be signed into law by a president anytime soon because, frankly, Democrats will vote against it. No matter what it is, Democrats will vote against it. However, should those fortunes flip at any point, you will see a move by that party when in power to pass legislation that enshrines this as a right. The right to an abortion. You will see that happen. It is incumbent upon states in this moment in time to make laws to avoid that. To avoid that. And it's the beauty of federalism. I'm a small federal government guy, so maybe I should get the Doge hat out while I've got it. And there's so much going on in our state right now. And Steve mentioned it off the top. These are just two things. We just finished budget in the House this morning, about 12 hours ago, they finished it. There's a lot going on. Not to mention, we have the Student Physical Privacy Act that we need to get moving in the Senate. Keeping children safe online. There's a bill in the House to do that. A human trafficking bill to stop human trafficking, obviously, just passed out of the Senate Judiciary Committee yesterday unanimously. If anything passes out of the Senate Judiciary Committee unanimously,
It's saying something.
It's a good piece. There's a lot going on. You need to stay connected. And you're saying, well, Justin, how do I stay connected? I've got the answer for you. PalmettoAlliance.org. If you click on Take Action, you will see at least four pieces of legislation that we are monitoring that we will score. And you have the opportunity to click on that. And you can send a note. Don't worry. You're like, I'm not good with words. I'm not good with writing. We've written it for you. We've taken care of that. All you have to do is put in your name and your email address and your actual address so it sends to the right person and click send.
Hey, let me just say this, too, about human life. The average person doesn't care if it comes through the House or the Senate. It
no
doesn't
one,
matter.
Yeah.
And in a way, it doesn't matter to us. What matters to us is the fact that there is a Human Life Protection Act in South Carolina. So we call on our legislators to get the job done, get it done now, and step out. And because we're going to push it in our world that we're in, and that's the church in South Carolina. The church right. house is going to influence the state house.
There's no doubt about that. Get it done. I think we just found our show title. Get it done. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of the show. We appreciate your support. If you want to connect with the show, you can do that. Give us a 5-star rating and review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to these things, because there are like 20,000 different avenues and channels for it. You can do that. Make sure you follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, popping out videos all day long, every day, content coming at you fast and furious. Get connected there. Share, like those. Share those, leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you, agree or disagree. We'd love to hear from you and begin that conversation on the social media spaces. This is the Palmetto Family Matters Show, the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state of South Carolina, where we are meeting faith with influence and connecting South Carolina's leaders with biblical truth, and we're shaping policy through prayer, advocacy, and your action. For Dr. Steve Pettit and Randy Page, I'm Justin Hall. Thank you so much for listening to today's program, and we will talk to you on the road.